ZK Sync introduces the ZK token, the probably one of the more anticipated networks to drop their token. Also, I mean, they dropped 17.5%, and it was like a, kind of a crazy large airdrop. Bankless Nation, welcome to the Friday Weekly Rollup. It's the second week of June, and we've got a bunch of good news. I think it's a lot of good news. And also, instead of Ryan, who's down and out for the weekend, hanging out with his AI family like he sometimes does, we're pulling in Anthony Cesano to substitute teach for the Bankless Nation to cover the weekly news in crypto. Couldn't think of a better person to sub in. Anthony, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on as a substitute teacher again. Always love doing these episodes with y'all.
Yeah, we love having you. And before we actually get into like the specifics of the news, like maybe let's just zoom out, Anthony. Just like quick vibe check. Just like, how are you feeling? We're in kind of a weird spot. We've gotten really good news. We've gotten some cool innovations that have happened this year. It's definitely been a very fun year. Overall, like what would you just say is this high level about just the vibe of everything right now?
Yeah. I think the vibe's a little weird right now. It depends on where you look. If you go on Twitter, I think the vibe is different to going on like some private Discord communities that you might be a part of, or even public ones that you might be a part of. I think everyone's still very, very excited about the tech and all the developments that have been happening. You know, we're seeing a lot of growth across the industry generally. But of course, if the price goes sideways for a few weeks, everyone starts losing their heads. So I think, yeah, there's a bit of a disconnect there. But I guess we'll get to the point where price starts going up again and the tech will be good and everything will suddenly be good for a few weeks as well.
Yeah, it does get hard to like decouple price action from like the sentiment of almost anything else. But there is a lot of other things that I think are just like pretty crazy things that happened this week. Crazy big. ZK Sync, one of the oldest and most longstanding layer twos, dropped their ZK token. So we'll talk about who is eligible and what's the sentiment around that. Optimism, this is one of the big things I've been referring to, launched the first permissionless fault proofs ever. So if you have been paying attention to the just technical advancements and decentralization of a layer two, Optimism got a green slice on their layer two beat. Security Orange, as we call it. Eigenlayer gets a competitor. Do they got the juice? Brand new competitor on the scene. This one's a little bit different than the others. And also, it's kind of like acquisition week this week. We saw like three or four major acquisitions. We'll talk about all of them as well. And something that's going to be very useful to have Anthony here, Pectra, is about to be one of the biggest Ethereum upgrades. It's chock full of upgrades. And so we're going to talk about just everything that is in the Pectra upgrade and when it is coming. But first, of course, our friends and sponsors over at Stakewise want you to know what they're up to in the world of liquid staking on Ethereum. If you're a solo staker, but your ETH is locked up in a liquid because you're solo staking, you can continue to be a solo staker in the Stakewise protocol while also being able to mint OS ETH. In order to use your solo staked ETH in DeFi, on layer twos, in Eigenlayer, or anywhere else across the Ethereum landscape, you get to keep your rewards that your node is earning while doing more with your ETH. And if you're not a solo staker, Stakewise is introducing a Vaults marketplace to choose perks that you want to add onto your staked ETH between custom MEV strategies, DVT, insurance, APY boosts, all things available through the Stakewise Vaults marketplace. There is a link in the show notes if any of this stuff piqued you. Gotta talk about the markets. It's not the greatest week in the markets. We are down across the board. Bitcoin down 5.8%, start of the week over $70,000, ending the week 66,800. Ether kind of even worse. Start of the week 3,800, down 8.8% to 3,475. So we were really like pretty riding high, especially the Ethereum community post ETF. And we just like couldn't keep it going. We just like lost steam. Overall, just like any comments on the price action, Anthony?
Yeah. I think what it really just keeps confirming is that there doesn't seem to be any really net new money coming into the ecosystem for quite a while now. Obviously, BTC has some new money coming in via the ETFs, but even that, like people don't realize that just because money's going into the ETFs doesn't mean it is a net buyer of Bitcoin. It can be doing a complex kind of strategy in the background where it could just end up being flat, where essentially you're longing the ETF and then shorting the market generally on BTC. So your exposure is basically flat there. So yeah, I think that because of that, it means that pretty much everything else except BTC is bleeding pretty hard. ETH, of course, got the ETFs approved, but they're not live for trading yet. We're expecting them, well, at least I am expecting them to go live next month, hopefully, for trading. But yeah, until they're actually live, there's no inflows, right? So people are just really speculating on what those flows will look like. And it's the same pool of money rotating around. I really do firmly believe that there's mostly the same money sloshing around in crypto and has been for quite a while. There's not really any net new money in. Like, no one that I know in real life, like literally no one that is not just in crypto already has even whispered a word about crypto to me. And they know how much I'm in crypto. It's like very uninteresting for them right now. There's no FOMO. I think people, especially if they're in 2021/2022, they're still burnt from that, because I think we tend to forget how bad that was for the average investor. You know, things like Terra collapsing wiped out so many people that had just come in and were new people. So for them to come back, I think they're going to need some really strong FOMO. And I don't think we're going to see that until BTC and ETH are firmly in price discovery and the mainstream media every day is saying, look at these new all-time highs, you know, get in now or else you're going to miss out, sort of thing. So until that happens, I'm not surprised at all by this kind of price action because of the fact that the new money is just not coming in right now.
Yeah, the Bitcoin chart, it's pretty interesting. We've never seen, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. We broke all-time highs, but we did not see price discovery. Like, I don't think anyone was expecting to break all-time highs and immediately skyrocket, but like, we broke all-time highs in March of this year, and it's now like well into June. How many months is that? Like four? It's been pretty crazy to break all-time highs and then not like do anything meaningful like 4 months in a row.
Yeah. It usually happens where it'll kind of hit the all-time high, the old all-time high, hang around for a month and then go into price discovery. But because this cycle has generally been quite weird and quite accelerated as well, I think that maybe the market is trying to, quote unquote, get us back on track into that classic 4-year cycle meme, where essentially BTC will go sideways for a little while and then start going into price discovery to catch back up to that. But yeah, we've not seen this kind of lag before from BTC going, you know, to its old all-time high. And then, yeah, it's 4 months or something, 3-4 months and not going into price discovery. But again, I think that speaks to the fact that there's not really new money coming in. And the BTC ETF money is what's keeping BTC so relatively strong as well. Like it's very, very strong, even against ETH, which I consider to be, you know, just as good as BTC, if not better from my perspective there as an asset. I just think that's the phenomenon that we're seeing right now. It's not going to last forever. And I also think that there is the phenomenon of the summer lull. Like 90% of the world right now is in summer in the warmer months. So they're not sitting around on their computers trading crypto, right? They're outside on the beach, you know, having fun. And that's traditionally what we've seen. But then you can look at the stock market, and stock market's doing really well and going, you know, bananas basically. But I think the stock market is definitely very different to crypto. Crypto is super risk on. Stock market, not so much, especially like the top 10, which carries the entire stock market, top 10 stocks. People don't treat that as a super risky, I'm going to throw this in for a punt sort of thing.
And we're looking at the ETH Bitcoin ratio on the screen right now. And we had just a pretty crazy green candle from 0.045 to 0.057. But we've retraced almost half of it. And Ether USD is definitely suffering in comparison to Bitcoin in the last like week or so. Again, down 9%, 8% this week for Ether and 5% for Bitcoin. And of course, Ether just doesn't have those flows. We have the speculation of the ETF, but we don't actually have the flows of the ETF. And I think like the entire crypto market that was going to buy Ether because of the ETF getting approved did that. But then like that was, we shot our shot, and now we're kind of just waiting for the flows to kick in. And we got a rumor out of this week. Well, not a rumor, but a mention of Gary Gensler talking about when the ETF S1s might actually get approved. And he says sometime this summer, which I will say is now. Now is the summer. And so like it's still a pretty like wide range of time. I think we've got like one more month. Like early July is kind of my time frame. I don't know if you have any opinions on like when you think the ETF might actually start trading.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, early July. I gave a date on my own show of July 8th, not based on anything other than kind of speculating that maybe it doesn't go live in the first week because of the July 4th holiday in the US. So it could be July 8th, which is the Monday following. I feel like it's not going to take very long because the S1s are basically copy paste from the BTC ones. It doesn't seem like there's going to be a lot of back and forth or feedback or anything to be rectified. So yeah, I feel like it's going to happen sooner than people think. But I guess like in the next couple of weeks, we'll get a better picture of that.
Quick update on the layer two ecosystem. We got $44 billion locked on layer twos. Arbitrum again coming, still having a healthy lead over everything at almost $18 billion. We're down 9% in TVL, but that's just because of the Ether price. But then the activity on layer twos is staying pretty damn high, I'd say. We're at an 11 scaling factor. So you can really just see the Denkun, the 4844 blob space, hard fork into Ethereum, and then we've just been like holding this pretty high level of activity. Anything you want to comment on the layer two activity? We're definitely going to talk about Optimism and their fraud proofs later on, but like globally, any comments about the layer two space?
Yeah. I mean, it's just continuing the trend that we've been seeing, especially since Denkun went live, as you mentioned, of usage going up and up and up because we basically gave more capacity for users and they're using that. And there's more apps going live and there's more interactions happening. It's great to see. I mean, I don't think the L2 activity has slowed down with the price slowing down at all, which is even better to see because as you were talking about earlier, we would love to see more and more of that decoupling of price and tech fundamentals and usage of products on chain. And I think we've been seeing that lately. So every metric that I'm tracking with regards to layer twos, specifically like the top layer twos or like Base and Arbitrum One, things like that, right? Yeah, even the smaller ones is still up and to the right. People are using them, people are getting value out of them. And, you know, sometimes people say, oh, people are just airdrop farming. Well, it's like, no, because Arbitrum already has a token. They're not doing another airdrop. So their usage going up is not airdrop farming of the ARB token. Base has said multiple times they're not going to do a token. Whether they do or don't is another thing. But we know that a lot of this activity is a natural thing, an organic thing. People aren't just farming things. They're using it, they're getting value out of it, which is what I really love to see there.
Switching into the world of macro, we got a FOMC day this week, where this is where the Federal Reserve comes together and tells us whether or not they're going to raise, lower, or hold steady interest rates. And then we also get the inflation report. So that inflation report came in pretty cool. So inflation this last month was lower than expected, which means that we are more likely going to get raise cuts. That's the general thought. But we did not actually get any raise cuts announcements. So we have indicated that there will be one raise cut coming this year, but that's no new information. That was already like priced in by the market. But I definitely remember waking up one of the days this week after the FOMC day and hearing the indication of like cooling inflation. And I think that's what caused like a pretty like good day in the markets. Like Ether was jumped like $200 or something. We have, of course, since retraced, but at least the market favorably reacted to this FOMC day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think people, because they saw the Canadian Central Bank and the European Central Bank, or the ECB, cut rates, I believe last week, they thought that the Fed would be signaling that they're going to cut rates. And I think that it's eventually going to happen, but I think people are a little bit of wishful thinking there of like, oh, it's going to happen now. It's like, maybe not. And markets are forward looking too, where they'll speculate on this before it actually happens. And I think that markets have been doing that for quite a while now. People forget that inflation actually peaked in June of 2022, which was when ETH bottomed. You know, ETH bottomed at 880 2 years ago now, and that's when inflation peaked in the US, not anywhere else, but I guess US is the main market we kind of look at within crypto. And then since then, things have really been up only for ETH and BTC specifically. But yeah, I think if the market wants to be more risk on, if people want new money to come in for the long tail of assets, it's definitely going to require the quote unquote cheaper money, right? Looser monetary policy. You can't really have this in a tight monetary policy regime, because people are like, well, why would I go, you know, speculate on this super risky stuff when I can just buy treasury with my cash and get like a guaranteed kind of return there? And especially because inflation has, you know, it's still relatively high and it's still adding to the cost of living. People just don't have that disposable income to go and gamble and degen on this long tail of assets. So that's what everyone, I think, is thinking about and looking at. But as I said, the market will price this in before it actually happens, like these cuts. And when the Fed starts cutting, I don't know, like I'm not a macro expert. We're going to see if they keep cutting down to what they were before and what inflation does, because it's really just a tricky game of managing the cuts versus inflation. And it's a fine line. I wouldn't like to be in Jay Powell's position, that's for sure.
I've definitely just noticed a lot more conversation about the cuts over the last like 2 weeks or so. The conversation has picked up in like intensity. And I think if there's one theme I've kind of just felt between the ETH ETF that's been approved but not live, and like having super high interest rates that people generally understand are going to get cut, like there's just an air of anticipation. Like we have like stars that are aligning, but like they're going real slow. They're going in slow motion. And so like people are generally bullish, but they don't want to get too bullish too fast because, you know, prices can still move against you because there's plenty of time before these like stars do align. That's kind of like my sentiment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's just the probably the phenomenon of how fast information travels versus how slow these things take to play out. Like mm-hmm. Information travels so fast because of the internet 24/7. Everyone's always like hyper informed. You know, you can be as informed as you want to be, but then the actual process, the actual reality of it playing out takes a lot longer, is a lot slower because a lot of these systems are still on the old world. I mean, the Fed is a very, very old institution. These notions of kind of rate cuts and inflation and the macro environment generally tends to move very, very slow, not just because of the systems that are in place, but also because it's a huge beast. Whereas the information will move at light speed, quite literally, right? So there's a mismatch in timelines there. And I think that explains so much of the market movements and so much of the market sentiment generally. And, you know, I recently had my 2.5 week break from crypto. I went away and came back and I didn't really feel like I missed anything, even though I know within those 2.5 weeks, things were
happening. Quite a lot and nothing at all at the same time.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So like, I feel like there's so much news and so much information that gets spread around, but the actual reality takes longer to play out. So you can go away for months at a time and then come back and be like, oh, okay, it played out. You know, I heard about this, you know, months ago, but now it's finally playing out. So there is a mismatch there.
Yeah. And definitely a plus one to the idea of patience around these things. This is a tweet from Hong Kim, who I believe works at Bitwise. Co-founder of Bitwise, who says, yes, $14 billion in net new flows into the Bitcoin ETFs in the first 6 months has been a remarkable success. But people don't realize that the gold ETFs had positive and mostly increasing flows for the next 8 years after its own successful launch in 2024. So basically, Hong Kim saying, like, we should pat ourselves on the back because we got all these fantastic flows into Bitcoin. But also, like, the reason to be bullish is that the flows don't stop coming. Like, we get further flows. And of course, we're hopefully about to get the same thing for ETH. And so, like, sitting on your hands, understanding that anticipation, but also being zen about it and knowing that we're destined to Valhalla, perhaps, if you have an ETF behind your asset, is like the takeaway that I'm getting from this.
Yeah, same here. I mean, I've been banging the drum about the ETFs being a passive vehicle for a long time now, and that's exactly what they are. They're a passive long-term vehicle. They will keep taking in flows over time. But yeah, it's been very impressive just to see how much BTC has taken in. But I think that was a pent-up kind of demand thing because it's been so long since people have been trying to get a BTC ETF. But yeah, I do think that going forward, BTC and then the ETH ETFs will get those passive flows in. And it may be disappointing for people if they're looking at the daily flows, which is literally noise. It doesn't matter at all. But if you look out, like, as I said, like you go away for a year and you come back, you're going to see all the flows that happened during that time. And then cumulatively, it will be a lot more than what you expected, I think.
Totally. All right. That was the market section. We're going to get into the ZK Sync airdrop. And of course, there's a bunch of activity across the layer two space as well. So we're going to get to Optimism's brand new fraud proofs, brand new shiny fraud proofs, as well as the rest of the news. So we're going to get to all of that and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred exchange to buy the vanilla ETH, not the ETF kind. So you can go bankless, of course. If you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the links in the show notes to getting started with Kraken today. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Are you worried about the security of your cross-chain transactions? Cross chains with confidence using Transporter, the revolutionary token bridging app designed to give you peace of mind. Powered by Chainlink CCIP, Transporter is your trusted gateway for securely moving assets like ETH, native USDC, and LINK, and so many more across some of your favorite blockchains. Over $2.8 billion has been been hacked from token bridges to date. Transporter puts a stop to this by ensuring your transfers are protected by the most robust security features available. Chainlink CCIP provides level 5 security, backed by multiple decentralized Oracle networks and an independent risk management network. Transporter also provides real-time tracking throughout your transaction with its newly engineered user experience, so you'll never have to second-guess the safety or location of your assets ever again. And the best part? Transporter makes it simple. Whether you're a blockchain beginner or a seasoned trader, Transporter's intuitive interface lets you execute cross-chain transactions with just a few clicks. No additional fees, just a low cost for using CCIP, which can be paid in LINK or your blockchain's native gas token. But don't just take my word for it. See for yourself why Transporter offers a stress-free bridging experience. Experience the future of token bridging at transporter.io and just send it. Have you ever felt that the tools for developing decentralized applications are too restrictive and fail to leverage advancements from traditional software programming? There's a wide range of expressive building blocks beyond conventional smart contracts and Solidity development. Don't waste your time building the basics from scratch, and don't limit the potential of your vision. Cartesi provides powerful and scalable solutions for developers that supercharge app development. With a Cartesi virtual machine, you can run a full Linux OS and access decades of rich code libraries and open source tooling for building in Web3. And with Cartesi's unique rollup framework, you'll get real-world scaling and computation. No more competing for block space. So, if you're a developer looking to push the boundaries of what's possible in Web3, Cartesi is now offering up to $50,000 in grants. Head over to Cartesi's grant application page to apply today. And if you're not a developer, those with staked CTSI can take part in the governance process and vote on whether or not a proposal should be funded. Make sure you're vote ready by staking your CTSI before the votes open. ZK Sync introduces the ZK token, probably one of the more anticipated networks to drop their token. So here are some of the details. 21 billion in supply. It is being priced on the pre-market on perpetuals markets at $36, which is coming in at, I think, at like an $8 billion network. So pretty hefty. Of course, ZK Sync has been one of the oldest brands alongside Ethereum that I can remember. I remember donating for Gitcoin grants, probably actually to one of your Gitcoin grants, Anthony, back in like 2019 using ZK Sync Lite. I'm sure you used it plenty of times as well, because I know you're a big fan of Gitcoin. In the airdrop, 17.5% of the total supply was airdropped in a one-time airdrop. So many other teams, layer twos, networks have done seasons. ZK Sync is not doing a season. They just dropped 17.5% all at once to almost 700,000 wallets. So of that 17.5%, 89% went to users with on-chain activity, who became eligible for the ZK Sync airdrop. 11% went to contributors. So this is like developers, researchers, educators, like off-chain activity that was rewarded with an airdrop. Just want to emphasize 17.5% to 700,000 wallets is like pretty crazy. I think Arbitrum I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head. The Eigenlayer did 5% with another 5% slated for later. Like industry standard has like somehow like converged on like 10% plus or minus a few percentage points. 17.5%, like correct me if I'm wrong, Anthony, but that's like the largest airdrop in terms of supply that I can remember.
Yeah, no, it's the same for me as well. Like, it is definitely the largest airdrop in quite a while. I don't remember which ones, in terms of major projects, which ones were larger. Mm-hmm. I think, as you said, the trend seems to have been it gets smaller and smaller or gets broken up into seasons. And I've been a big advocate of not just like bigger airdrops, but like bigger community distribution. And I think that with ZK Sync, the community contribution came out to around 67%, I believe, with team and advisor and investors, getting about 33-ish%, which is much better than what the industry standard has been up until now. I think the industry standard tend to have been 50-50 split, where a lot of that would go to a treasury instead of to the users from day one, which I think is actually detrimental to a token, because what ends up happening is that tokens open up at a pretty high fully diluted value. Maybe there's only 5% of the token circulating, and then the market has to price in another 95% or up to 95% of tokens coming out over the next few years, which has been a trend that I hope to see reverse in the coming future. I'm personally trying to be the change I want to see in the world and talking to projects about this and trying to get them to come over to my belief that, you know, have a large float, have a big float from day one on the market so you can have actual price discovery on this stuff. But ZK Sync definitely is pioneering it here, which is really great to see. I mean, as I said, 17.5%, yeah, seems to be the largest in quite a while.
Yeah, so just to really put some numbers in here, investors of ZK Sync will own a supply of 17.2% versus the 17.5% that's airdropped to the community that is airdropped. And then the team will own 16.1%. So the airdrop supply is larger than both investors and the team. And overall, so they have this like pie chart that we're looking at where there's also a supply of a token assembly. I kind of think that means like it's like a foundation of sorts is like what people would think. And then ecosystem initiatives, which I think is incentivization campaigns for the future. So they're classifying this these two things in the community section, which comes out to 2/3 of the total token supply allocated to the community, both past, present, and future. And then 1/3 is allocated to the team and investors. It is pretty nice to see like the airdrop larger than investors and teams. It's like part of the ethos of crypto. It's kind of hard to follow through on. It's hard to convince projects to follow through on. Also, like it's just not in VC interest either. ZK Sync just showing the way and covering a path, I think that's pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah. I think there might be a little bit of a caveat to that generally, not just applying to ZK Sync, but just generally in that in the investor kind of pool of entities in there is quite small relative to the kind of airdrop pool. So for example, you might have like maybe a couple hundred individuals that make up all of the investors, whether they be angels or VCs, and then they have different percentages of the supply. You know, there's usually a lead VC in rounds that take a huge chunk of the supply. So they may have, you know, a huge chunk there, and then you've got the airdrop going to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of individuals. So it's a bit different like that, but it's hard to plan for that. Like even if you were to do an ICO, you know, one whale can come along and just buy up so much of the supply, right? So the only way to actually get proper distribution is have years worth of price discovery through multiple cycles, like how ETH had, like how BTC had, to actually get good distribution. You can't plan for it. It's very, very difficult because there's always the whales that are around, whether you do an ICO or do it as a private investment rounds. And even if you try to get around that, it's difficult, very, very difficult because there's no on-chain identity yet, right? There's no one uses on-chain identity products to try and do Sybil resistance and stuff like that. So essentially you have this game of trying to balance things, but no one's gotten it right so far. But I feel like ZK Sync has done pretty well on the distribution side of things.
Yeah, one more caveat about the 17.5% airdrop. ZK Sync users got 89% of the 17.5%, and then 5.8% of the 17.5% was sent straight to like native applications on ZK Sync, which were then like given the mandate to do what you see fit with these tokens, like use it for incentivizations, further airdrops to your community members. And so they did the kind of the model where like in addition to airdropping to their own users, they also airdrop to projects with a mandate to drop to their own users. Okay, so let's unpack how people actually got eligible for the ZK Sync airdrop, because this is where a lot of the tension over the airdrop was felt. You needed to accrue 1 point, and there were seven different ways to accrue a point, and you just needed to have 1 point in order to be eligible for the ZK Sync airdrop. You need to have interacted with 10 contracts on ZK Sync Era, or deposited liquidity into DeFi protocols, or used one of the account abstraction Paymaster accounts on ZK Sync Era, or traded 10 ERC-20 tokens, or held one of the native ZK Sync Era NFTs, or on the ZK Sync Lite network, donated to a Gitcoin round, or at least transacted 3 different times. If you did one of those things, you became eligible. And then there were further activities that you would have earned to have add on a multiplier onto your eligibility. If you read the blog post, which I highly encourage people to, if they want to learn more, the ZK Sync team shared some of the philosophy of how they wanted to drop their token. Obviously, it's pretty well known that ZK Sync is one of the most botted networks, like Sybil networks out there, because they have been from the earliest of days very explicit about the existence of their token. Like the founders and the team said, like, yeah, there will be a token. That's how you decentralize a network. We're not going to hide that. As a result, that kind of like was the magnet towards a bunch of like sibling activity. In their blog post, they talked about how they wanted to identify and reward people on a human first approach. So they tried to identify human-like behaviors, such as like using smart contracts very early in their existence rather than trying to like hide amongst the crowd. They say humans tend to be risk on. Other like criteria just to like try and parse out what is a human. After they developed the criteria that would reward humanness, Then ZK Sync added on a pretty light-handed sibling filter as well. So not trying to just filter out every single sibil, but just like admittingly letting some sibils in because they still nonetheless overemphasize rewarding human behavior. Just a very light sibil filter on the end of things just to like kind of pull out the most egregious ones. And so that was their like philosophy. If you go onto Twitter, you will see a ton of discussion about all of these things. And like Signal is like being thrown all over the place. You can only imagine that if there are Sybil accounts, and Sybil farms, they also know how to Sybil Twitter too. And so deriving noise, which is something that we do at Bankless because we cover these things. Like we generally have teams on for live streams. We definitely cover the token drops. Like getting people's feedback is always very difficult because people are just shouting left and right. That you don't have a lot of time to capture feedback. Overall, like maybe I have my thoughts and sentiments, Anthony. Maybe I'll ask you about yours first. Like overall, like what are your thoughts about like the feedback about this token drop?
I mean, I think my general thoughts about airdrops in generally, not just specific to ZK Sync, is that they are all heavily farmed, right? And they are all heavily botted. And it's not just on chain. It's also on Twitter because Twitter has done nothing to curb the usage of bots. They are absolutely rampant on there. And it's naive for people to think that people aren't taking advantage of this to steer sentiment for certain reasons, right? Like we saw this play out with Starknet doing their airdrop. There was just a massive amount of hate because the Sybils didn't get what they what they wanted. So essentially what they do is if they're already part of a massive kind of operation running many different addresses to try and Sybil to get more money, they'll go on social media, they'll start fighting the project, and then they hope that the project caves and changes the distribution to give them more. And this has happened a few times with other projects. And I think if you do the math on it, this is not small change we're talking about. I saw something on Twitter that it was one entity tied to 65,000 addresses. Now, if you are controlling those 65,000 addresses, you're obviously going to be smart enough to go on Twitter, get a bunch of bots spun up, and then try and steer sentiment so that you can get the team to actually reward you. Because if the team then says, okay, well, we're just going to give every address that ever used our protocol even $100 worth of tokens, if you own 65,000 addresses, that's $6.5 million, right? So just putting the math on these for people to understand the gravity and the incentives here. And when you follow the incentives, that's what you get to. And the bot activity is very, very obvious. As much as they try to act like they're not bots, it's extremely obvious which ones are bots and which ones aren't. And now with AI taking off as well, they may try to hide themselves a bit better, but it's still very, very obvious. And I've been watching you tweet about this and seeing all the replies to your tweets. And I actually, before likes were private, I went through the likes and I looked at the accounts. 90% of them were bot accounts or hacked accounts because a lot of them will say joined 2015, but they're hacked accounts. They're accounts that have not been, they don't belong to the original owner, and they've got no mutual follows with me at all. They're just retweeting everything got to do with like airdrops generally. So it's just very, very obvious once you go into it. But now that likes are private, you can't even do that anymore. So yeah, it's a bit of a mess.
The tweet that I'm showing on screen is a reply to a tweet that I said, I'm collecting feedback on the ZK Sync ZK token drop. Please let me know your thoughts. And also, if you're in the Bankless Discord, you can at me in the Airdrop Hunter channel directly too. And this was the most liked tweet in response to my tweet. And the response about like what the changes ought to be would be reduce the allocation for the team, lower the highest max allocation from 100,000 down to 25,000 to 30,000. Allocate more tokens according to their fees spent, their active days and weeks and months, their paymaster, which is a contract, native bridge volume, and then light transactions. Give allocation to the minimum 1 million to 1.4 million wallets, and then there multipliers for old active wallets. Basically, every one of these suggestions is take away tokens from the fat tail and give it to the long tail. And this tweet happens to have like an insane amount of like 1.2 thousand retweets, like 2.5 thousand likes. And if you just go down to the comments, it's just like it's just incomplete. And so it's hard to parse out signal and noise because I will also go into the Bankless Discord and I don't want to say that like this particular token drop was like unrelentingly like beloved by everyone. There is everyone that has problems with the token drop. But if you go into the Bankless Discord, there's like problems. People will say like, hey, I think I should have gotten allocation for my wallet that used like Argent or ZK Sync Lite, but I didn't. And I'm disappointed by that. There will people say like, I'm very happy with this airdrop, it's good for me. And then there are people say like, look at these bot farms, I'm upset by this. But like the feedback and conversation in there is like coherent, and like everyone has a different opinion. And then you go onto Twitter and everyone has the same opinion, and it's just like, give allocation from the fat tail and give it to the long tail, which is just like, to my opinion, like if that's just like, oh, you want Sybils to be rewarded. That's kind of like,
yes,
my take.
Exactly. And it can't be more obvious. I don't understand why people would like, like it can't be more obvious. If you want to reward the long tail, right, and you know that there's lots of Sybils there because we have on-chain proof of this, it's very obvious, then what do you think's happening here? And as I said, once you put the math to it, this is not small numbers. This is very much worth someone's time to go out there and steer sentiment if they can get the team to cave and reward them for it. Because then they just go off and, they've made a lot of money for very little effort, because it's just bots that they're running that are very readily available. And there are probably like teams that do this, like teams of people that, where it's 100%. Become like industrialized for them to do this, because the payout is so large. So, I don't know why anyone is even doubting that this happens, given what we've seen in crypto anyway, like outside of this, the incentives are there to do this.
it's totally rational. Even ZK Sync is making like tweets. Here's a tweet that they made in response. Meanwhile, something important you need to know. There is a massive coordinated Sybil misinformation campaign against ZK Sync on X run by thousands of bots. And so like, they're not even like saying like, hey, we'll try and like get feedback. They're just going full frontal, is like declining the legitimacy of like a lot of these requests. I'm out here at Edge City Esmeralda, which is like a pop-up city, kind of like Suzalo. And there's a couple of ZK Sync members here, and just like the ZK Sync team is like working like, 24/7, just like trying to gather data, trying to gather information. And then they put out a tweet today and said like, we believe in our choices. We're going to keep with the path. We're not going to change anything. And like, maybe they could have had enough data to like be more precise about the distribution of their tokens, but like the DDoS attack that is like a Sybil attack just like robs them of that opportunity. That's what I have been on the receiving end of many like Twitter mobs. It feels like a DDoS attack on your brain. Like it's impossible to parse like signal from noise. Anyways, that was that. I would also like to say, to like tie off this section, the fighting between like Sybilers, users, and teams is actually a symptom of SEC governance failure. This is the opposite of what a fair and orderly market looks like. This is like capital being wasted, capital being destroyed. A lot of the Sybilers were like, I'm bummed that I didn't get, like, some of the Sybilers were like, I'm bummed that I didn't get the token, but at least give me my gas fees back. So, like, that is, like, inefficient capital being destroyed. And all of this is because of this, like, kind of unfortunate airdrop paradigm, which we could have a much better equilibrium if Gary Gensler and the SEC allowed us, but they don't. And to tie off the token, not to be ignored, Tyco, which is a much newer layer two on the scene, a base roll-up. We did a show with them on the Bankless Premium feed with Justin Drake as our technical co-host. If you want to learn all about Tyco and what a base roll-up is, their token drop also went live. So 5% of the initial token supply, 50 million tokens, can now be claimed by eligible users. Tyco, like much more recent project with a much more recent mainnet, like mainnet went live just a few weeks ago. How did it like get to a token so quickly? Part of that answer is a base rollup needs a token to stake to be a part of the functionality. So they needed a token to go out there to be live. Anthony, any comments or thoughts on Tyco?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, like another airdrop of a big layer two or a layer two generally. As you said, Tyco is definitely newer to the ecosystem. But what interests me the most about Tyco, probably not their token, but the fact that they're a based roll-up, which is something that I've been doing a lot more research into over the last couple of months, just based roll-ups generally and pre-confirmations and stuff like that, which seems to be like the end game of L2s. Like if we were to look 5 years out, that's kind of what I think it's going to look like for most of the L2 ecosystem. But yeah, as you mentioned, like they need a token to achieve a lot of their goals around decentralizing, around getting people to run the infrastructure as incentive mechanisms. So yeah, pretty standard airdrop, I think, from them. It wasn't anything groundbreaking from what I saw. But yeah, I mean, people knew this was coming as well, I think.
It is worth noting that the claim window for Tyco ends July 5th. So that's relatively quick. I think the ZK Sync claim window is open until early next year. So you have a pretty big window of time. But nonetheless, you can check your eligibility for both Tyco and ZK Sync using Bankless Claimables. So if that is a tool that you use, which you should, you can use that and it'll tell you exactly how many tokens you got or did not get. Okay, back into the optimistic roll-up world. Optimism, fault proofs, which are the same thing as fraud proofs, and stage one have arrived. Open source permissionless fault proofs are live on OP mainnet, and with them, the OP stack arrives at stage one decentralization, a major step forward for the superchain. Just to really lay down what fraud proofs are the mechanism in which we remove the multi-sig from layer twos. So we have currently multi-sigs on layer twos, on some layer twos, in order to upgrade the chain or like maybe fix a bug. But of course, that also opens up these networks towards like exploitation. Like you can exploit a network with multi-sigs. Why hasn't any of the networks done this? Well, because of course they're building the things. But fault proofs, battle-tested fault proofs, are the big step to getting a multi-sig off of the security model for many of these rollups. And Optimism mainnet, the OP mainnet, has launched and deployed their fault proof. So they are in production. They are working as intended, which has earned Optimism 2 green new slices on layer 2B. So data availability, state validation, sequencer failure, and proposer failure are all green slices on layer 2B, leaving the last one, the exit window, which is just a timer on network upgradability. These are the things that are risks to layer 2s, and Optimism has 4 green slices out of 5. Pretty big day for the OP stack, the Optimism community, for the Ethereum rollup landscape. Sassel, give me your thoughts, your sentiments.
Yeah, a very, very big day, especially for Optimism, who have been building this for quite a while now. And for those who may not know, there are two major optimistic roll-up kind of frameworks live today. There's the OP stack, which runs Optimism and Base and a few other networks out there. Then there's the Arbitrum stack, which is Arbitrum 1 and their orbit chains and kind of like L2s, L3s sort of thing there. And they both use fraud proofs for their security mechanisms here. Now, for me, the most exciting thing about L2s generally is that they run on a secure L1 in Ethereum, and then they can have the optional escape hatch window, where essentially what that means is that if the L2 is down for whatever reason, you can and goes offline or something happens, you can still get your funds back on the L1 by doing a transaction on L1 to essentially escape your funds out of the L2. That, to me, is one of the most, if not the most important properties of L2s, and that needs fraud proofs to be able to work. And that's exactly what OP stack has now, and that's exactly what Arbitrum 1 has. But Optimism went a step further by making it permissionless out of the gate, whereas Arbitrum is still permissioned. So they have 14 whitelisted actors that can submit these fraud proofs, whereas in Optimism's case, anyone can do it. Now, I know that Arbitrum is going to move towards permissionless fraud proofs as well, but as you mentioned, this is what this kind of pie chart is, or this pie representation is all about, filling in the green there. There are sometimes yellow. I believe yellow is when it's permissioned, and then there's red, where it just doesn't exist at all. And once we have all green across the board, that's when they can move to stage 2 decentralization, which is really the end game for these things. And the number one thing I like about these rollups continuing to progress through these stages is that it kills the FUD that rollups aren't going to decentralize. Like, that's a big piece of FUD that a lot of people have been using for a while now, saying that, you know, rollups and L2s are always going to be centralized. They're never going to be able to decentralize. They're never going to be true kind of blockchain, so on and so forth. But we're proving them wrong each and every day. And every time we do something like this, it proves them wrong. And I strongly believe that there are very, very strong incentives for these chains to decentralize. Centralization is a huge liability. It means that a government agency can come to and force you to do things using your centralized power. And as a builder of these networks, you do not want that power, because you are trying to essentially be as detached from it as possible, or from the operation of it as possible, and trying to create a decentralized community around it. So if you want that to happen, you need to get to stage 2. And I don't think anything is stage 2 right now. Arbitrum said that they want to be stage 2. Well, nothing that has usage. There are some that are very, very small that are stage 2.
Deadly.
No. If you go to some of them, like they really don't have much usage compared to the big players, right? Like, right. Kudos for them for being stage 2, but I don't think it really means anything if you haven't got any usage, right? Because you're not really giving any value to anyone. But Arbitrum has committed to being stage 2 by the end of this year, which I hope to see play out. And I'm sure Optimism isn't far behind them. And because a lot of the chains are built on the development kits that these ecosystems put out, automatically they get to upgrade to stage 2 as well once they've implemented that. So for example, Base will be able to go to stage 2 or stage 1 now, because OP Stack has those fraud proofs implemented, which I think is really cool, because it means that we're not reinventing the wheel every time. We're allowing this community to come together, build these things out, progressively decentralize, and that has downstream effects on a bunch of other chains as well.
Yeah, that's. I think that's really the point of emphasis that I want to drive home. Since so many chains use the Optimism OP stack, they just get to take these fraud proofs and put them right into their network. So Base, as you said, Blast as well, which has got $3 billion on it. Mode Network, mm-hmm. which has $650 million on it. Bob, Zora. These are all OP stack forks, right? And so they will just be able to take these fraud proofs and put them right into their network, which is kind of actually the point of the OP stack framework and why you would use the open source piece of software, because then you get the benefits. All of these networks, Base didn't have to do false proofs. Actually, Base is a core contributor of the OP stack. So actually, this is their technology. But like anyone else using the OP stack gets the fault.
They all work together as a collective. I think that's the overall mm-hmm. point here, is that we're not just decentralizing the tech. We're decentralizing the development of the tech, mm-hmm. which is exactly the Ethereum philosophy, where Ethereum layer one development is very, very decentralized. And specifically, Optimism has always been about following that philosophy, following that, basically mirroring what happens on Ethereum L1. And I think that they're doing that. I think they're doing that in both, you know, in practice and in theory, which is great to see.
Vitalik, of course, gave his congratulations to Optimism, saying, "Welcome Optimism to the club of stage one plus layer twos," meaning layer twos where proof systems actually have teeth. "I'm looking forward to seeing many more layer twos join this club soon, especially some ZK ones." And then he follows up with, I just have to put the meme of the week here, so we're getting the meme of the week in the middle of the show. "Ethereum, where yesterday's FUD is today's solved problem," starting with the very first FUD ever, which was "Ethereum will never launch." That was 2014 FUD. "Ethereum will never get past the DAO fork. The merge will never happen. Layer 2s will not have low fees. Layer 2s are just multi-sigs," which was the most recent door that the Reaper just laid. And then the next door of Ethereum is "cross layer 2 UX is too fragmented. Running a full node takes too much space. And MEV centralization and builder censorship." So these are the next things that's on Vitalik's horizon to go slay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we just keep slaying them. That's the point. I think the trend is what you want to be paying attention to, is that all of the FUD, or at least 99% of it, has been completely and utterly wrong, or has been right for like a short period of time. Like, when people say the merge will never happen, well, technically you're right until the merge happens, and then you're just completely wrong, right? But the thing is, you knew these people were wrong years in advance, mm-hmm. because you saw that the merge was happening on test nets, on shadow forks, and there was just no way it wasn't going to happen by all logic and reasoning. But of course, you know, Ethereum has its haters, a lot of them, unfortunately, but they keep getting slayed, and I'm glad mm-hmm. the Grim Reaper is on our side.
All right, everyone, coming up next, EigenLayer gets a brand new competitor on the scene and makes a very big acquisition. A big moves in the world of restaking. Terraform Labs, the creators behind Terra Luna, agree to settle and pay the SEC $4.5 billion. Where is it getting the money from? We got Pleaser DAO and the Wu-Tang album. We got Crypto the Game acquisition. We got an Alchemy update. All of this and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Mantle, one of our layer twos who definitely uses Optimism technology under the hood as well. If you haven't checked out Mantle, you probably should. It's pretty fun things to do on there. You should go check it out. There is a link in the show notes. New projects are coming online to the Mantle layer two every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of layer two design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from EigenDA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle layer two to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. Taking self-custody of your crypto is one of the most important things you can do on your bankless journey. It's also one of the hardest things to get right, with huge consequences if you don't. If you want help going bankless, talk to Casa. Casa helps you take custody of your crypto assets, so you don't have to wonder whether you're doing it right. Casa is a one-stop shop for doing self-custody the right way. With Casa Vaults, you can hold Ether, Bitcoin, stablecoins, all with one simple app and multiple keys for the ultimate peace of mind, with a support team to help you every step of the way. But it doesn't stop at self-custody, because even though crypto is forever, you are not. We all plan on making life-changing wealth in crypto, but with Casa's inheritance product, life-changing wealth can elevate to generational wealth for your kids and your loved ones who don't know anything about crypto. With Casa, you won't lose your private keys, and you won't accidentally take them to the grave either. Click the link in the description to get started securing your generational wealth. Celo is the mobile-first and EVM-compatible blockchain that's built for the real world and designed for fast, low low-cost payments worldwide, driving real-world use cases like Opera MiniPay, one of the fastest-growing Web3 wallets with over 2 million users across Africa. Celo is seeing a meteoric rise with over 375 million transactions and a million monthly active users. Not to mention Tether and Circle just deployed native USDT and USDC on Celo, supported by leading exchanges like Binance. And now, Celo is looking to come home to Ethereum as a layer two. With a game-changing proposal, core contributors at C Labs aims to leverage Optimism's OP stack, pioneering a transition as the biggest L1 to become a layer two, with testnet arriving as early as summer 2024. With the Celo layer two, gas fees will stay low and users can even pay for gas using ERC20 tokens, including native USDC and USDT, sending crypto to phone numbers across wallets using Social Connect. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. Make your voice heard in the Celo forum to shape the future of Ethereum. Follow at Celo on Twitter and explore the ecosystem built for the real world on celo.org/quests. And we're back with a tweet from Sazzle, who's also on the show with us. Petra, the next Ethereum network upgrade is shaping to be one of the biggest in Ethereum's history. The confirmed EIPs include EIP7702. I'm not going to list all of these off. Sazzle, maybe you can kind of walk us through some of these EIPs and why, what significance they have and why people should care.
Yeah, so maybe I should kind of just touch on the ones that I find to be the most exciting and the ones that probably have the most user-facing effects here. So as I said, Petra, the next Ethereum network upgrade, which I'm speculating will go live in Q1 of 2025, is shaping up to be the biggest in Ethereum's history because it includes so many things. And I think originally they being the core devs started off with wanting to do a relatively small fork to get it out, you know, maybe faster. But there's so many things that people want to get into the network that are pretty critical, mind you, that are pretty important, that it's now become this kind of mega fork. And the things that I'm most excited about, there's probably two or three of them. So number one is EIP 7251, or otherwise known as Max EB. So what this allows people to do is stake more than 32 ETH per validator, which essentially means that I think the latest I saw was up to 2048 ETH per validator. So if you're running 10 validators today because you're staking 320 ETH, in the future, you'll only have to run one validator with 320 ETH on it, and everything would be the same. Your block proposal chance will be the same. You'll get the same kind of rewards generally, but this is a huge unlock for the network because it basically allows us to collapse the amount of validators live on the network while keeping the same security, both economic and security via how many node operators there are. But we take a massive load off the network, which enables us to keep scaling Ethereum as a network generally, which to me is definitely the most exciting part of that. And because of that, it means we basically get to keep scaling up L2s with something like PeerDAS, which is what I've listed here as well. So PeerDAS is essentially the first implementation of data availability sampling, which is part of the full kind of dank sharding roadmap, if people have heard of this. And essentially what this allows us to do is scale up blobs even further, which means even cheaper fees for L2s and cheaper fees for a longer period of time. For people who've been paying attention lately, they may have noticed that blob usage is going up, which means once they actually reach their capacity, fees will start going up. And that means the L2 fees will start going up. Now, in order to, I think I put a tweet about this just very recently. Now, in order to rectify this or in order to keep scaling up, there are two different things we can do. We can increase the size and or count of blobs, which basically gives us more capacity. And we can do PeerDAS and in the future, even more stuff around data availability sharding such sampling there, which allows us to scale up even further. And without getting too technical, the TLDR is basically cheaper fees for longer for L2s, more sustainable for L2s, and a continued kind of good user experience there. But as I mentioned, like MaxEB actually plays into this as well because it takes load off the network, takes load off the validators, which allows us to do this in a safer way. And I think that the last thing I'll say here, the last thing to be excited about is EIP 7702, which replaces 3074, I believe it was, which is the account abstraction EIP, which essentially makes normal Ethereum accounts, we refer to them as externally owned accounts or EOAs, on the same level as smart contract or smart wallet accounts there. Now, there was a bunch of drama around 3074, around how it was insecure. And then Vitalik came along and said, hey, why don't we just do it this way with 7702? And essentially that is the EIP that is now going into the network there. So a lot of stuff to be excited about. That's just the tip of the iceberg, really. But those are the things that I'm most excited about there.
Yeah. So there's nothing like overly massive. Like we're not merging. We're not doing EIP 1559. But there's a lot of like pretty like more than incremental upgrades to the network. So a lot of
PeerDAS is definitely massive. Stuff. I think
it's massive, like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Result of years worth of research and dev to get us to that point. It's basically on the same level as Blobs, I think, in terms of what it represents for the network. But yeah, nothing like the merge. I don't know if we ever get something like the merge again.
Yeah, and it would be like kind of bad news, actually, if we did.
Yeah. Maybe something went wrong, I think, or we had to like fix something critical. Hopefully we never get that. Yeah, the unmerge, right.
Okay, yeah, I agree. Like that, PureDAS is just like more blob space, right? And especially with that illustration that you had on your tweet, where like we're starting to approach some sort of like fee structure where people are actually going to have to have some sort of contention for blob space. But this is just what the future of Ethereum is. Like we're going to make it have a lot more scale, which we did when we had blobs, and then we're going to fill up those blobs, and then we're going to have like another 3x increase of supply. That's what how Mike Noyder said it on our episode with him. And so we'll probably have a blob market show up maybe in the next like 1 to 3 months. And then there will be like a pretty healthy, like people are gonna have to pay for their blobs rather than blobs being free. And then like you said, sometime around Q1, if that estimation is correct, we're just gonna have more blobs and then transactions are gonna go be free again. And then we're gonna repeat that process all over again.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, this is extremely bullish. It basically means that the entire Ethereum scaling roadmap is working and Ethereum is growing. Like, I would be bearish if blobs remained free forever. Like, that wouldn't be a good thing. It would mean that no one's really using them. Or maybe we scaled them up so much that there's just so much capacity. But I don't think so. As you illustrated, it's a cat and mouse game of we scale up, people fill the space up, we scale up some more. And it's kind of a never-ending game. But what blobs allow us to do is basically keep scaling up in a relatively easy manner without having to make substantial fundamental changes to the network. It's literally just a tweak. Like increasing the count or size of blobs is a one line code change. It is not a big deal, but it does have downstream effects in that it adds more load to the network. And that's why we do other things like max EB, which takes load off the network. So we're essentially doing a swap here. It's like, okay, well, let's take off the load from the validators and let's put that, from having too many validators on the network. And then let's put that load back on the network via blobs, which actually serves a purpose and actually gives value to people.
Moving into the world of restaking, Symbiotic has come out of stealth. Symbiotic is, they call themselves a permissionless flexible restaking. And so this is permissionless in terms of governance. So I think Symbiotic is positioning themselves as a governance minimized, governance reduced restaking platform. And then flexible implies just not just ETH. Eigenlayer, of course, has ETH and ETH derivatives. Symbiotic is going for, I guess, everything else. And so they have opened up what is pretty similar. Like if you're a yield farmer out of Eigenlayer, an Eigenlayer points farmer, then a pretty similar thing going on with Symbiotic. You submit capital. And I could only imagine this would result in the collection of a token at a later point. Symbiotic has been in stealth for a pretty long time now. This is a Paradigm and Cypher Fund backed project. So if you've been paying attention into the restaking world, you've probably caught wind of this. And a Cypher Fund is part of the, like, not officially, but just like it's a bunch of Lido members. And Lido is also, of course, a Paradigm incubated, or maybe not incubated, but just like alignment with Paradigm. And so this is like coming out from that corner of the world. Any thoughts, reflections, Anthony?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad to see Eigenlayer getting competition across the board. Mm-hmm. There's two others that I know of that have come out recently, like restaking
Karak
platforms.
And Nectar.
Yes. Yeah. Those two. Yeah. So there's four. I mean, I think there's going to be more because obviously the opportunity is so big. It's the same that happened with Lido, right? People saw Lido getting so big and like, why is Lido so big? We can make new liquid staking platforms and restaking platforms that chip into that, which has happened. So when the economic incentives are there, people will come up and come with competition. But I do think that we've kind of jumped the shark here a little bit. Like for me, restaking really only applies to like an actual staked asset on a network like Ethereum, like ETH being staked and then restake. That's where the actual economic security comes from. If you're restaking, like, it doesn't even, like, some people are saying, oh, we'll restake stable coins. Like, what? Like, I'm just a little bit confused here. Like, you know, what stablecoin is secure?
Just staking for the first time. You're just staking.
Yeah. And even if you are like staking a stablecoin kind of LP pool or, token or something like that, it is not restaking as has traditionally been defined. It needs to be securing something, right? So I think from that perspective, it's been a little bit weird. I don't know what Symbiotic's approach is here, but I understand that these other projects need to add more assets because they need to be competitive with Eigenlayer. If they just said, oh, we're doing ETH restaking too, people will be like, okay, I'll just just come and farm the token and then leave once I've done that and just go back to wherever I want from that perspective. But yeah, it remains to be seen how this shakes out. I think I may have said this on Bankless, but I've definitely said it on my show. I think the end game may be that restaking as a primitive just gets enshrined at the protocol. Right. And then essentially what happens is that all of these projects are just competing on the kind of interface front for the users. Right. It's not on the restaking front. But I don't know if that's going to end up happening because there's already so much money sloshing around, so many different incentives around with this right now. But as I said at the top, I'm still very glad that EigenLayer has competition. I definitely did not want EigenLayer to exist just on its own because monopolies, no matter how aligned they may seem, are not good for anyone.
Right, yeah. And in the murmurings that I just hear from my different corners in like AVS circles and LRT circles and just like restaking circles, like Symbiotic has like chops to them, like technical chops to them. And so I think the perception is like this is probably the most valid, legit competition to EigenLayer that's like shown up on the market just because like, I mean, Paradigm is very technical. CyberFund with their Lido experience, they know what they're doing with like liquid staking stuff. And so let the games begin.
Definitely.
Moving on to the world of EigenLayer. EigenLayer made an acquisition of Rio Network. Now, Rio Network was going to be an LRT project. It was going to be like one of the most like conservative and risk off and just like LRT networks that was going to be out there. That was the way that Rio had been pitched. And then it turns out EigenLayer just decided to buy them. They are not turning them into an LRT. So there is no EigenLayer enshrined LRT. They're using Rio restaking as kind of trying to implement like a spec or like an example model of an LRT. But then also Alan and the Rio team are also just kind of like Chad operators. So it's in addition to acquiring some of the technology of Rio, they're also acquiring some of the talent as well. And so congratulations for Rio for getting acquired before even launching your network. and then also congrats to EigenLayer for capturing some of the best talent that's out there. Any thoughts on this, Cecil, before I move on?
Yeah, just a classic acqui-hire, right? And a good one at that, as you just explained there. And this is, I guess, going back to what I was saying earlier about how I feel like all of these restaking platforms, they're not competing on the actual restaking itself. They're competing on the BD, right? The distribution, the integrations, the market. Like it's very true for a lot of things in crypto where they start off being a primitive, but then realize that the primitive is worth nothing without the BD and marketing and community and, you know, integrations and stuff like that. So they actually move most of their operations to that. And the primitive ends up falling into the background. I think that's exactly what's going to happen with restaking. You know, the restaking aspect itself is table stakes. And then if you are going to be the dominant restaking platform, you need to be doing the BD, the partnerships, the integrations, which is exactly what EigenLayer, I think, has been doing, you know, from day one. And now they're just doing an even bigger way by doing this acqui-hire of Rio restaking, which allows people to use that tech within the EigenLayer orbit.
Do you remember Radar Relay, Anthony?
Yes, that's an old name, but yes.
Testing your Ethereum history. Yeah, so that was also an Alan project. Alan is the founder of Rio, who now is part of the EigenLayer team. So yeah, Alan's been around the Ethereum ecosystem, so he's seen a thing or two. So congrats to the team. But we are not done with acquisitions. Crypto the Game. Do you remember Crypto the Game, Anthony? Did you play?
I didn't play, but I think we had a little bit of a debate about this a little while ago where I kind of followed the incentives and was like, I don't know how this kind of like plays out long term, but we'll see. But yeah, I know of it. I haven't played it.
Yeah, so Crypto Game, it sucks up a lot of time. So if you're a busy dude, I've heard of people like lose their like sense of reality because they go down the Crypto Game.
Hey, it's World of Warcraft all over again.
It's World of Warcraft. Yeah, it is a crypto reality show, a reality game show that's happening in real time in the interwebs, right, on Telegram, in Zoom, but then also once a day there's like a Hunger Games like game that is played, something you have to go do, scavenger hunt on the internet, scavenger hunt in real life sometimes, but then at the end of every single day there's a process of elimination, and so it's both like kind of Hunger Gamey where there's a game every single day, but it's also Squid Gamey where there's like it starts off with like 1,000 people and there ends up being one winner to win. I think somebody won like 84 ETH at the end of the 10-day game. Anyways, this was acquired by Uniswap of all people. And so they say, Crypto the Game tweets out, excited to share that we have been acquired by Uniswap. We're forever grateful to our players. We now have the full voice of Uniswap Labs behind us, and we're going to use it to make season 3 the best one yet. And of course, Uniswap also puts out their blog posts as well. And so Uniswap's just sitting there investing in on-chain experiences. And so kind of like an interesting hire out of Uniswap. Like, it's obviously something totally different than the Uniswap exchange. David Phelps, I know, who runs Joke Race, his take was that it's just very obvious that user endpoints, like user experiences, is one of the most valuable places to be. And so what Uniswap is really doing is finding like where an app that users will use and just like having that be a part of your brand. So whether it's about the Uniswap AMM or not, that's kind of the play there.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with that. I think that we need more on-chain experiences that don't have to do with pure speculation. You know, you could argue that some of this is speculation. As you mentioned, there is a prize pool, so people are speculating on that, but there is a huge social aspect to it. And I think that the social experiences are probably some of the most important and underexplored within crypto. So if we can get more of these things where they mix that, you know, that financial kind of carrot on a stick with the heavy side being the social side of things, we can get more interesting stuff here. And I think there's been other experiments as well, like, you know, Farcaster, for example, is a big one, right? Mixing the kind of social side of things with the financial side of things. But I think Crypto the Game is unique from what I've seen of it and what I've heard about it, in that it definitely feels like Survivor on crypto. I don't know if anyone has watched Survivor before, but it definitely feels like that, but in a much more cutthroat way, because you can be Anon, right? Like, you don't have to dox yourself. And when you're Anon, you can do a lot of things that you otherwise wouldn't do if you were doxxed. It's a very interesting dynamic.
I have been told, and this probably goes for you as well, Anthony, that we would probably not do very well playing the game because we would just be eliminated too fast, because like our targets on our back are massive. Like, David from Bankless, Anthony from the Daily Way, get them out of here. Like, vote them off the island. Like, they can't be here.
And but so, we could join as an Anon, right? Like,
we could join as an Anon. But I've also heard that if you join as an Anon, you need to like make up a backstory. So if you come in as a peer Anon, that is also a target on your back. So you need to be like, so you need to be like more than Anon, but not like, you know, crypto famous, like somewhere right in that medium.
Like, you can't be JCR because everyone knows who you are, right? Like, even as an Anon, you're like, you're too famous of an Anon. So you'll probably be eliminated as well.
I heard this one story of like a guy or girl was playing Crypto the Game, and they're in Telegram. You're like squatted up with like four or five people or something. And then your squad kind of like rotates as the game goes. But like some guy went on like a run. And so he was gone from an hour. And so his team needed to vote someone off. He's like, this guy is not taking this seriously. We have to vote this guy off because he like went on a run.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, I would definitely lose this within like the first 5 minutes. I'm like, sorry, guys, I got to take a break. Taking a break? How dare you?
You're off the island. Get him out of here.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Anyways, season 3 is coming, of course. So this is going to be the first season where Uniswap is the operator of Crypto the Game. I did an interview with Daniel, so if you want to learn a little bit more about that, that episode is in the Bankless archive. It's also on Twitter as well. Okay, this one is pretty cool. This one's close to my heart. Wu-Tang Clan's album Once Upon a Time in Shaolin is turned into an NFT and is going to get released. There is a ton of lore behind the Wu-Tang one-of-one album Once Upon a Time in Shaolin. I don't have enough time to go into it, but basically Wu-Tang album, one of the most famous rap groups of all time, made an album that they only made one of, didn't release it. This was in 2014, so like pre-Spotify era, right? They made it into one CD, and then they sold it for $2 million to Martin Shkreli, who had his assets seized because he went to jail for securities fraud. And that was put up to auction by the US government and was bought by PleaserDAO. And album is not allowed to be released until the year 2102. But I think we're going to do an episode with the PleaserDAO, and they are actually accelerating the release date for every fractional NFT that is bought. So if you buy one fractional NFT, you will move up the release date of the one-of-one Wu-Tang album by 88 seconds. So you bump it up. And so if once enough of these things are bought, then the actual album will be released and you will all, owners of the very cheap NFTs, will be able to listen to it. These NFTs are being issued on Base. I think it's a cool story. I can't do this story justice in this quick amount of time here, but it's very along the line, the ethos of just like one of one NFTs, cultural artifacts, distributing power to the masses, direct artists to consumer relationships with no middleman. And it's pretty cool to see this come into NFT format. Any comments here, Anthony?
I can safely say this is one thing that I have absolutely no idea about. Like, I know a lot of things in crypto. I know a lot about a lot of things, but this definitely not, because I don't listen to the Wu-Tang Clan, whatever they're called. Mm-hmm. It's not my style of music. And I definitely don't pay too much attention to the NFT side of crypto. It's just not something that I'm too interested in. So yeah, I'll take your word for it on how interesting of a story this is. But I do like the mechanism of the, you know, buying an NFT, reducing the time until it's released. That's something cool and mm-hmm. something pretty uniquely enabled, I think, by crypto.
Yeah, so there have been 5,800 unique collectors and 145,000 shares of this thing. So one NFT is a share of the album. So, you know, governance rights over the album. And mm-hmm. so if you want to take part in that and help release this thing, I've actually listened to this. UCU, there are like semi-frequent listening parties. Song 4 is my favorite song. I couldn't tell you what the name of it is because I don't think there are names. But yeah, pretty cool. Anyways, moving on. Terraform Labs, Do Kwon agreed to pay the SEC a confirmed $4.5 billion in a civil fraud case. I did not know that Terraform Labs had $4.5 billion, but when the headline out of CoinDesk says agree to pay the SEC a confirmed $4.5 billion, that tells me that there's $4.5 billion somewhere. And that makes me say, in like, WTF, bro. Like, mm-hmm. where did that $4.5 billion come from? Why does the SEC get to get it as a fine? There are plenty of people who had, like, money get literally burned on fire. Maybe they should get the money. What are your thoughts and sentiments here, Anthony?
I mean, I completely agree with you. I think that the fact that they have that much money to begin with is a shock to many people. I'm not sure where it would have come from, if anywhere. Maybe it came from that BTC that they were stockpiling in mm-hmm. order to try and kind of use it as collateral to prop up their stablecoin. Maybe it came from there. I'm not sure. I don't even know if it's detailed in the case of where this money actually came from. But I agree with you. It should not be going to the SEC mafia as protection money, really, right? It should be going to some of the victims. Like, it'd be kind of difficult to know who to give it to, I guess. But right. I think that there are a lot of different victims here, and just giving it to them in any capacity is way better than giving it to the SEC, because giving anything to the government, I mean, they're going to just spend it inefficiently to begin with, and no one is really protected here. Like, the SEC's mandate is to protect investors and to help them and make them whole when they can. If they just keep this money for themselves, they haven't made anyone whole, they haven't helped anyone. Yes, Do Kwon and some of the other Terraform kind of labs people got their comeuppance, which is great. Like, mm-hmm. I do enjoy that. I do enjoy seeing Do Kwon get punished for his, you know, his stupidity and his crimes. But at the same time, I don't enjoy the $4.4 billion, $4.5 billion that is going to the SEC instead of going to the people who are actually hurt. Like, what are we doing here? Are we just inflating the SEC's kind of coffers? Yes. And that's not the way it should be.
Yeah, absolutely nuts. Like, if you just did a random airdrop of like USDC onto like addresses, Cosmos addresses that had Luna at the time of the collapse, like, sure, not a perfect way of reparations, but like way better than like giving it to the SEC. But yeah, I mean, the SEC has proven itself to be like, you're not really in the interests of people, very much in the interest of himself. One cool release this week comes out of Alchemy. Alchemy is an RPC provider, quite like Infura, like one of the biggest ones. And they are introducing rollups. So they want you to deploy a rollup. So kind of like a conduit in the rollup as a service provider. This is the rollup as a service like category. They are becoming a rollup, a place to deploy rollups. So if you want to build, launch, scale your layer two, Alchemy now has like a rollup distribution platform, hosting platform. Yeah, hosting platform. That's the right word for it. Mm-hmm. And so pretty cool. I'm not calling it a pivot because I'm sure they're definitely doing their RPC stuff too. But it's like an adjacent vertical that they are heavily leaning into. So pretty cool announcement out of Alchemy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And just continues the trend of the modularization of Ethereum, right? Where everyone gets mm-hmm. to basically build on this stack, build in a modular way. And that opens it up to a Cambrian explosion of innovation and of product offerings. There's not just like one kind of company or one thing that offers those products. It's a multitude of different entities that offer these products in different ways. And the market, the free market, chooses what they want to use and chooses what they don't want to use, which I think is very, very bullish overall.
Totally. And then raises of the week, we had a gargantuan raise. Paradigm has announced their third fund, $850 million venture fund, focusing on crypto projects at the earliest stage. Of course, they had to actually add in crypto there because of that one moment where they took crypto off the website and everyone took that extremely personally. So congratulations to Matt Huang and the entire Paradigm team. $850 million is nothing to scoff at. And of course, Paradigm is like one of the most revered, well-respected, technically strong VC funds in crypto. Any thoughts or additional comments?
No, I mean, no real thoughts. Not surprised at all by this. As you mentioned, like Paradigm's big already and being big begets being bigger in venture, especially if like you get money in from LPs that are basically like, oh my God, like there's so much going on in crypto right now. I need exposure to it. Who do I go with? I'm going to go with one of the most respected and you know, well-performing funds, which is Paradigm, definitely. I think that definitely up there. They have made some, I guess, maybe confusing investments over the past couple of years that people may have looked at. But at the same time, if you just follow VC incentives generally, that's what it kind of points to. It's like when you have that much money to deploy, you kind of need to find projects to deploy it to. There's not actually enough quality projects out there to fill billions of dollars of VC money. Like that doesn't exist. So you need to be going to maybe more riskier project, maybe projects you otherwise wouldn't have funded and so on and so forth.
Yeah, you can definitely invest faster than we can build quality projects.
And
that's just true across the entire crypto VC space. Anthony, I want to thank you so much for subbing in for Ryan, who's taking a well-earned break. If people just loved the sound of your voice and they want to hear more of it, where should they go?
They should go to The Daily Gui on YouTube or just go to my Twitter profile and you can find all the relevant links there. And I've also restarted doing episodes of the Into the Ether podcast for the OGs that remember that podcast with Eric Connor every week now as well. So yeah, people can go follow both of those things if they want to. But The Daily Gui is just me, you know, every day, almost every weekday, I try to make those episodes happen, talking about Ethereum, giving the latest updates there, specifically with a heavy focus on Ethereum Core Protocol and Layer 2. So if people are very interested in that, then yeah, feel free to follow the show.
Yeah, Bankless listeners who are familiar with Anthony will know we bring him on quite frequently because he does a bang-up job covering Ethereum very deeply, very technically. Bankless, like 100 level, 200 level, 300 level, Daily Gui, 300 level, 400 level. very deep Ethereum and definitely something I have straight into my ears every single morning when I wake up and I get Sassel's Daily Gui podcast right into my ears. So thank you for doing what you do, my brother.
Thank you for having me on. It's been a joy and yeah, I look forward to next time.
Absolutely. Bankless Nation, you guys know the deal. Crypto is risky. You can lose what you put in. But hey, we're headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we are glad you are with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.